he cares about the middle class. But the giant corporations get all the cash. We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine. I'm your host, former congressional attorney, and today is Election Tuesday. That's right, this Tuesday and every Tuesday until that fateful Tuesday in November, November 2nd, where hopefully America does vote to kick out the Republicans, we will discuss election issues. We will discuss John Kerry, George Bush, everything that you want to know about what the candidates are saying about each other, what their plans are to lead the nation, what we can do to help one candidate or the other. And, of course, my biases are clear, as you know, by that song that you heard. Today, of course, being Election Tuesday, we have the special music, Kick Out the Republicans, by Donnie Daly, a listener from Los Angeles, who sent me that great song in a few weeks ago. And that just goes to show that I like when my listeners send me things, because Donnie Daly, your song will be played every Tuesday from now until November 2nd. Today's topic on Election Tuesday is everything you always wanted to know about Senator John Kerry, but were afraid to ask. This is your chance to ask questions of the highest people in the Kerry campaign, whatever you want to know about John Kerry. We've got two terrific guests today. We've got Kerry campaign spokesperson Kathy Roeder. She's going to be in the first half hour, again, answering your questions about John Kerry. And then in the second half hour, we've got Hanno Cabrera, the national spokesman for the Democratic National Committee. And they are here, right here, on the Inside Scoop to answer your questions. And I really want to encourage you folks to call in. You know, sometimes on the Inside Scoop, I do shows like yesterday on the Bush-Saudi connection, where mostly I'm providing information to you. I've done shows on Harkin Energy, on Bush's AWOL, on Condoleezza Rice before the 9/11 Commission, where I'm giving you the inside scoop, where I'm telling you what's going on in Washington that the government doesn't want you to know and the mainstream media isn't reporting. And that's certainly part of what I do on the inside scoop. But the other thing I think that we do here is provide a service to you folks. This isn't only my show. This is your show. This is your chance to ask questions. And I know that you've got to have questions of John Kerry. There may be concerns. Maybe you think that, you know, he's not fighting hard enough. If you're to the left of John Kerry, you might be concerned about his vote for Iraq. Or maybe you think he doesn't press the Republicans hard enough. I'm going to ask those questions, but I want you to ask those questions too. From the right, we have Bush attacking Kerry as a taxer, as a flip-flopper, saying he has no plan for Iraq. Well, what about that? We're going to ask these questions, but I want to encourage you folks to ask the questions. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number. If you want the numbers, some people like the numbers, it's 877-577-2667. You can also email me. I get your calls easier than I get the emails, so I'd prefer a call. But if you want to email me, some of you at work I know and can't afford to actually be on the phone, the email address is mark, M-A-R-K, at radioinsidescoop.com. So like I said, this is your chance to ask the people running the Kerry campaign, the people in charge, of the Kerry campaign. Why is he doing this? Why isn't he doing this? How does he stand on this, that, or the other? You know, today, John Kerry appeared in Providence, Rhode Island, and was talking about the cost of tuition for students in college, how it's gone up 13% in the Bush administration, and how hard it is for students from middle class and lower middle class families to even attend college. Well, what is Kerry's plan? What is Kerry's plan for 10 million jobs that he's promised us? Who would be taxed more under a Kerry administration? Who would be taxed less? What about corporations taking jobs outside the country? Kerry's got a tough job ahead of him, and I think it's up to us, even those of us who support John Kerry, to ask him the tough questions. After all, you know that he'll be asked these tough questions as the campaign goes forward. And so here we have a chance, just among us, mostly progressive liberal listeners. I know I've got some conservative lurkers in there, and that means you, Ed from New Jersey. I know you're listening, and I welcome my regular conservative listeners. But most of the audience here at Radio Power and at RadioInsideScoop.com are left of center, or moderates. And so here's a chance among ourselves to ask the questions that may bother you about John Kerry. Maybe some of you are even considering voting for Nader. Boy, I hope not. We may get into that. The point is that there are too many questions to ask in the limited time that we have. And so I could ask the ones I want, and I will, but I really want to encourage you folks to call in and get your question answered. It's not often that you get in touch with the very leaders of the Kerry campaign, the people in charge of the Democratic Party. You got criticism? Bring it on. Right? You got compliments? Bring those on too. Suggestions? Hey, you know, maybe your suggestion given here today on the Inside Scoop will convince the Kerry campaign to go in a certain direction, run a certain ad, respond to Bush in a certain way, challenge Bush in a certain way. Here is your chance to actually influence the fall campaign. So I hope you call in. Again, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667. And after the break, like I said, we're going to have Kerry campaign spokeswoman Kathy Roeder and the DNC national spokesman Hanno Cabrera. You know, there's so many questions that we can ask, and I really want to focus on you. And then, of course, at the end of the hour, I've got an inside scoop for you. My inside scoop this today is going to focus on a Bush administration official who basically was misleading Congress. We'll get into the details at the end of the hour. But his goal was to mislead Congress, and now he's out of government profiting with your tax money exactly from the way he was misleading Congress. We'll get into all of that at the end of the hour. I guess the other question I would ask, and I'm going to ask the Kerry campaign, is, you know, how are they going to respond to some of these Bush ads? How are they raising money? How is it that they're going to be able to combat the huge cash advantage that the Bush administration has? So there's a lot to talk about this Election Tuesday. So listen to the song, Kick Out the Republicans. We're going to go to a break. And when we come back, Kathy Roeder, campaign spokeswoman, and your calls, 877-57-SCOOP, or email M-A-R-K at RadioInsideScoop.com. Back with the Kerry campaign right after these messages.
Offshoring of U.S. jobs is good for you. We know this is so because the powers that be keep telling us so. And they've never been wrong, have they? The latest assertion of offshoring absolutism comes from two peers of the economic establishment. First, let's hear from John Snow, the former CEO and corporate downsizer who is now George W.'s Treasury Secretary. Asked about the issue of corporations shipping out America's middle-class jobs, Snow was downright cheerful about the move. It's one aspect of trade, he said, and there can't be any doubt about the fact that trade makes the economy stronger. Can't be any doubt, John? You might check with some displaced workers about that. But Snow is way too busy cheerleading to talk to workers. You can outsource a lot of activities and get them done as well or better at a lower cost, he marveled. Excuse me, but perhaps it's time to outsource his activities. Then comes super techie Mark Andreessen to lecture us rubes. He's the former honcho of Netscape, who now runs an outfit that makes software to help CEOs offshore jobs. It's a hugely, hugely positive trend. Absolutely positive, he raves. Absolutely, Mark? One doesn't get the feeling that he's talked to many of the displaced either. But he's also way too busy for that, since he's now spreading his theoretical absolutism through a one-man media campaign to extol the joys of offshoring. By sending our jobs abroad, he says, those foreign workers will be able to buy Apple computers, Nike shoes, and other goodies from U.S. corporations. This is Jim Hightower saying, excuse me, Mark, but one, those workers are not being paid that well, and two, while those corporations have American names, they make their products abroad, too. Sorry to be so untheoretical here, but the grubby bottom line of offshoring is that big global investors get richer and the middle class gets stooped.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
In the year 2000, the Democrats won the election. But Bush and the Republicans could take the rejection. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop and welcome to this special Election Tuesday. As you know, every Tuesday here on the Inside Scoop, we bring you all the election news. And that's why we have that special intro, Kick Out the Republicans. I've got a very special guest. Her name is Kathy Roeder. She is a spokeswoman for the Kerry campaign. And this is your chance to ask questions that you want to know about the Kerry campaign. I can see the lights lighting up now. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Thanks very much, Kathy, for agreeing to be on the show.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, let me ask you just first of all, I guess we'll start with the softball questions. John Kerry, I know today, was in Providence, Rhode Island, talking about tuition for public universities for American kids. What would John Kerry do to help middle class or lower middle class kids have a better chance of going to college?
It's college week this week, and John Kerry is talking about issues that affect students, families, and young people who are still paying for college all week long in a broad message that's about the economy. John Kerry has a few ideas that can go specifically to lowering expenses for college. One of them is his Service for College plan that asks students to make a commitment to their community by participating in community service activities similar to the AmeriCorps activities, and then give it in exchange off pays for a portion of college. But overall, and something that John Kerry is talking about every day on the campaign, whether it's college tour week or not, is that the direction the economy is going has a direct impact on how much you're paying out of pocket for things like education, health care, gas prices. All of this is impacted by the economy in many ways. And right now what we have is a president who is fiscally irresponsible. He's got the biggest deficit in the history of our country right now. And that means that college campuses across the country are being forced to dig deeper because they don't have money coming from the top through the states like they usually do and like they can depend on, and they're passing that cost straight on to college students and their families.
And that's why costs are going up then?
It's one of the biggest reasons that costs are going up. We've got these tax cuts that went to the wealthiest people that took trillions of dollars out of the economy, and that's the kind of money that would have gone to the states. Would have helped pay for college.
Kathy, I want to go to the phones and let my callers get in on this, and then I've got a bunch of tougher questions for you.
Sure.
The number here is 877-57-SCOOP. This is your chance to ask the people at the top of the Kerry campaign what's going on, what they're doing. A caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine's Inside Scoop. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Scott.
Scott from
Connecticut.
From Connecticut. Okay, Scott, what's your question or comment?
I want to know what Mr. Kerry is going to do to stop these FCC witch hunts that are going on. And just last night hearing that Victoria's Secret is planning on canceling their fashion show this year because of about 300 emails that were received from the FCC about complaints. And I think that, obviously free speech is tantamount to a real democracy.
Scott, that's a great question. As you know, if you don't know, the FCC has been cracking down ever since Janet Jackson's ill-fated appearance on the Super Bowl, has even basically kicked Howard Stern off the air, and is threatening a lot of things. Let me ask you, Kathy Roeder, what is John Kerry's position on the FCC crackdown? Kathy? Kathy, you there?
Hey, I lost you.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. The question is, what is John Kerry's position on the FCC crackdown? Specifically the crackdown on Howard Stern and the caller mentioned Victoria's Secret. Basically, ever since Janet Jackson's appearance on the Super Bowl, the FCC's been pretty tough. What's John Kerry's position on that?
I actually haven't heard him comment specifically on any of those examples. I know that in many ways, John Kerry has been concerned about freedom of speech and making sure that we have those opportunities in media outlets. I think one thing that comes out of this and something that John Kerry has talked about is media consolidation that we've seen in a lot of different realms, and it's one of the things, Mark, that you're out there up against every day.
That's true.
Fighting against these big behemoth corporations that are involved in media, and I think this is really one of the consequences of that is they get an opportunity to bigfoot on content. And that's a danger that we face as we go further through media consolidation.
Well, I would hope that this show is a dialogue as well as an interrogation, and that I guess you take my caller's concerns to heart. I would agree with Scott that the FCC has gone a bit too far. It's one thing to say that during the Super Bowl there shouldn't be a naked body. I think that's understood. I think the Super Bowl, people expect a sports event. But I think when people turn into – and I am not a fan of Howard Stern, frankly, but I think people who want to turn into that kind of content, they know what they're getting when they turn it in. You know, when you tune into Howard Stern, you know what you're getting, and I don't think that the FCC should crack down that hard on that. So maybe we can carry that message back to the Kerry campaign. Let me ask you another question, Kathy. This is from an email from Angel Lopez. Angel asks, says to ask Kerry's people about the alleged 2005 draft. How will he handle it? Is it true? In fact, I got another email on the exact same topic from Wes. Wes says he's a big fan of my show. He's also concerned about a possible draft. What is Kerry's position on that?
Well, it wouldn't happen under a Kerry administration. Just earlier today, John Kerry did a conference call with about 200 reporters from college campus newspapers across the country and was asked that question, would you institute a draft? Obviously, this is something that young people are very concerned about.
Certainly.
With the ongoing war in Iraq, and Kerry was emphatic in answering that question. It's a simple answer, no.
Okay.
And I don't know if this is something the Bush administration is considering and just not being public about. I haven't heard that it's a plan they have, but it certainly would not happen under a Kerry administration.
I tell you, I'm being flooded with email questions, and I think that's just great. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. If you want to email, it's Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. Eventually, I'll get to my list of questions, but my listeners come first. So let's – David from Ann Arbor – wants to know, and these are issues that, frankly, I have no idea. That's why I'm glad I have you on the air, Kathy. These are some tough questions. David asks, where does Kerry stand on labeling genetically modified food or increasing testing of cows for mad cow disease? He wants to know if Kerry will stand up to the large food companies to do what is right for food safety. Do you know his position on those things?
Well, I know there are folks who are in Iowa who are better experts at this than I was in New Hampshire during the primary. I do know that John Kerry supports country of origin labeling, and this is something that became a large issue during the campaign. I'm sorry to not be able to give you a more specific answer, but I would direct you to johnkerry.com, and because I know there are statements that he made during the campaign and speeches that will contain information on this topic.
That's a great idea, Kathy. If there's any question that Kathy, it's hard to know everything, and I don't blame Kathy for not answering some, not knowing some of these tough questions. All you have to do is go to johnkerry.com. You can see the center's position on any number of issues, and maybe even contribute to the campaign, which actually brings me to my next emailer who wants to know, particularly since I have guests, yourself and a guest from the Democratic National Committee, he wants to know if he gives to the Kerry campaign, where does the money go, versus if he gives to the Democratic National Committee, and why should he give to one or the other or both?
Well, there are lawyers who spend a lifetime studying this sort of thing. I can tell you that if you give to the Kerry campaign, it's something that I would love to see our supporters do, and it enables to do things on our own that are explicitly for John Kerry and for our own purpose and our own message. I think it's great, and obviously we encourage people to support the Democratic Party, and we hope they will continue to do that. The Democratic Party is working towards a larger goal, registering voters, working up and down the ticket. That's the main difference, depending on where your money goes. I think there are good reasons in years that aren't necessarily presidential election years, when you're supporting mostly Senate Democrat governor candidates, that it's great to really focus your efforts there. I know it's hard for people if they have limited resources to try to split their money between giving to the Democrats and giving to John Kerry.
But I assume every bit helps. Every dollar helps.
So we do encourage folks to just do what they can and help us out as much as possible. You know, George Bush will have $200 million to spend, and that's just money he's going to spend between now and August.
Okay, let me go to a caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Kathy Roeder, Kerry campaign spokesman. What's your first name and where are you from?
Tony
from?
Washington.
From Washington, D.C. All right, Tony, what's your question?
Can I have two questions?
Sure, go ahead.
What is his position on giving the District of Columbia?
You got to speak up, Tony.
What is his opinion on giving the District of Columbia voting rights in the
great question.
New Congress hopefully to come up?
Okay, that's a great question. We'll hold for your second one. Kathy, how's his feeling on D.C. statehood or voting rights in Congress?
D.C. statehood. I don't know what John Kerry's position is on that. I'm sorry, I haven't heard whether or not he said anything about that. That's something else I would direct the caller to check out the website, johnkerry.com.
I apologize, caller. I'll tell you, I know the Democratic Party has stood out for years to support D.C. statehood. It's something that's been, I think, in the Democratic platform virtually every 4 years. So I would think that is something that John Kerry would support. But Kathy's right. I'm sure you can find the answer at johnkerry.com. What's your other question?
Okay, and what is he going to do is, I know everybody's going anti-corporation, but there has to be some corporations who have a civic mind on America First for outsourcing jobs, I mean, keeping jobs here.
Outsourcing.
Is he going to find those corporations who are willing to work with the new administration to keep jobs within the United States? And thank you. John Kerry, gotta vote for me.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. I think that's a great question. Obviously, that's something that John Kerry talks about a lot. Kathy, will John Kerry do to slow down outsourcing of jobs and to encourage corporations to keep American jobs rather than giving them all to Bangalore, India?
Yeah, one of the things that we can recognize is there are two ways to go after this problem. One of them is to keep jobs here, and the other one is to keep corporate tax revenue here. And there are two different tracks on this. John Kerry has put as part of his campaign proposal one of the most sweeping reforms in corporate tax that we've seen in our history. And that is because we have outsourcing of jobs, and that's a problem with jobs going to low-wage countries like India and China. But we also even almost more dramatically have an outsourcing of corporate tax income. And you saw this in a Wall Street Journal report recently that 60% of corporations haven't even paid taxes here, even though they're making a ton of money here. We have $400 billion in capital that is offshore right now. That's basically overseas, even though these are American companies, and they're going to Bermuda and the Cayman Islands, opening a P.O. box, and that way they can avoid American corporate tax laws because they're not headquartered here. And John Kerry has said that doesn't make sense.
Kathy, I'll tell you, I read that same Wall Street Journal article, and I want to give the full impact to listeners. You're absolutely right. It says that 60% of corporations pay no tax. But to me, what was even more extraordinary than that was that it showed that 94% of corporations pay less than 5% of their income. And yes, in fact, one of the things that Vice President Cheney did when he was head of Halliburton was he worked it out. He took Halliburton's taxes, which were in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and brought them down to nothing. So
yeah, this is a scam. Basically, this is a scam that is being run by the top corporations in the world to make the most money, that can hire as many as accountants as it takes to find every loophole you can. The thing is, we know where the loopholes are. It just takes an administration and a president who has the courage to stand up to some of these big corporations and say, that's it.
Well, Kathy, that takes me right to my next question from another listener who emails me. This is Deb, a frequent listener. Glad to have you. Deb says that she loves me and her whole family supports me. So I hope the whole family is listening, Deb. Deb asks, what about corporate welfare? What can we do to stop corporate America from taking over the country?
I think it starts right here. I mean, you've got to apply some pressure using the tax code, and you can apply some pressure, mainly, and this is a, it's a fairness issue. You basically say you're doing business here in America. You're essentially an American business, and you're going to pay American corporate taxes, and John Kerry will be the kind of president who will stand up to corporations and say that to them.
Yeah,
you,
well,
you also have the jobs issue, though, where you can help American companies that want to do the right thing in America, that are offering health care to their employees, that are staying here in America. You can help them compete on a global scale by giving them some tax incentives. And that's not corporate welfare to do the right thing for American companies that are staying here, offering good health care and pension benefits. You're basically just ensuring that we have the kind of growth or maintaining the middle class that we got, because when companies said, yes, we'll offer health care benefits, we'll offer pension benefits, those are the tools and the steps to get people up the ladder to the middle class. And in order to keep them, we want to make sure that we don't force our employers' hands to the point where they're competing with companies in China and India who don't maybe need to offer the pension or health care benefits.
Kathy, I got a tougher question for you, but it's a fair question, and I think Kerry at least should be able to answer it. I don't know if you can, but basically, I mean, would he increase taxes? I mean, here you have this Wall Street Journal article, the one that you saw, the one that I saw, saying that 60% of corporations are paying no taxes. Is he going to increase corporate tax rates?
Will he increase corporate tax rates?
Or at least, let's not say rates. Is he going to increase the actual payments made by corporations?
Well, corporations will pay more under John Kerry because they'll lose these loopholes.
I see. Okay.
So absolutely.
Fair
they
enough.
Will, corporations will be paying more under John Kerry than they are under George Bush because they'll be actually following the law.
Okay. Let's
but
go.
But at the same time, Kerry has said that he'd be, if you close international tax loopholes, you still have the opportunity to cut the overall corporate tax rate. So there may be a lower tax rate, but you're not going to have the scofflaw corporations who are avoiding taxes.
Well, that makes sense.
Folks who are detailed in the Wall Street Journal. You'll have an overall more money coming in. Companies who are doing the right thing may have lower taxes.
That makes sense.
There'll be more money coming.
You know, I have no problem with corporations that are paying their rightful share in taxes, getting a break, as long as those that aren't paying anything pay more, and that sounds like a great plan to me. Let's go to more callers. The callers keep coming, 877-57-SCOOP, or email me, Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. It's not often that you get someone from the Kerry campaign and you can ask them directly questions, so please take your best shot, criticize, compliment, whatever it may be. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Kathy Roeder. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Xavier from Santa Cruz.
Xavier from Santa Cruz, what's your question?
Well, first I want to point out that the 2000 election, I was an unrepentant voter for Ralph Nader. I will be voting for Kerry this time around.
Thank you for coming back into the fold.
Well,
we need you.
There's a stipulation here.
Okay.
And, your guest, are you there still?
Yeah, are we here?
Okay, I heard a little click. Her inability to answer a few of the questions, I understand there's so many issues, but my main concern about why I'm hesitantly voting for Kerry is because, like the DLC and the Clinton Democrats, it really concerns me that people on the left are not given credence. And I know you have, like, these Southern Democrats that you got to, like, appease them too, but I think if you were to bring people like Ralph Nader was actually, he had a ticket to the debates in the 2000 election, he was turned away.
Well, actually, let me
just stop turning away us lefties.
Well, okay. Well, let me answer that myself, and then I'll be happy to give Kathy a chance.
Okay.
I just want to answer from my own because I support turning Ralph Nader away from the presidential debates, and I'm explaining why.
One more point, okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to say I think the way to solve this is not proportional representation, but preference voting. I think if I could vote number one for Nader. And then, you know, if I were going to throw my vote away, then my number two choice would be Kerry. And then we would really understand, you know, a lot of these people who are voting for Kerry may have wanted to vote for Nader, but, you know.
Xavier, let me give you my short answer, then,
okay,
and then
sure.
I'll give Kathy
I'm
a chance
done.
To respond. Okay, you can listen on the computer, or you can hear me right now.
Okay.
It seems to me that a lot of people on the left, a lot of Nader supporters, support, if you will, let the perfect be the enemy of the good. I can agree with you, Xavier, right at the outset. I support preference voting. I support proportional voting. I support all those democratic options. And if they come into law and they come into, then absolutely you could vote for Ralph Nader first and John Kerry second. I myself prefer Kerry over Nader. But if you did, that would be the way to do it. You're absolutely right. We don't live in a perfect system. And you know that we don't live in a system the way you want it. By all means, advocate that, support
but if
it.
You're not allowed to come to the table and push push the dialogue more to the left.
Well, I think you are.
Give a false impression that it's further right than it really is.
Xavier, I guess I think you are allowed at the table. It's one thing to have John Kerry participate in Democratic debate in the presidential debate where he actually takes voters away from John Kerry. You know, I'd love to have a Republican. I'd love to have Pat Robertson run and take votes away from George Bush. I would support Pat Robertson running. In fact, some of the Republicans have actually given Nader money for his candidacy. But it's one thing to actually come in and take votes away. It's another thing, if Ralph Nader had decided to run as a Democrat, run in the primary, he could have been in all the debates with Dennis Kucinich and everyone else, and he could have gotten his voice heard.
My question for your guest would be, how does Kerry stand on proportional representation, but preference voting? I think I'd really like to know that, because I think that would really be a thermometer of where things really stand in the country.
Okay, I'll ask her and see if she knows. Thanks so much for your call, Xavier. Yeah. Keep calling in.
Okay. Kerry hasn't made a call for that in this election, and I would caution the voter. Earlier I didn't have a long answer to the mad cow disease, but I can tell you now that John Kerry has a 5-point plan that's laid out clearly on our website under the agriculture issue section that involves test and hold policy, a ban on selling brains, vertebrae, or meat attached to them, also more inspections, and federal aid for the American beef industry. And I hope the fact that I didn't have the 5-point plan on the tip of my tongue just a few minutes ago indicates to him that Nader is not welcome in the political debate, because it's not. But I'll tell you now, I think we should be cautious in this election. While right now John Kerry has focused his election reform message on making sure that we don't have voter fraud, voter suppression, and the kind of voting irregularities that kept many people from having their votes counted in the 2000 election, my own personal view on this is you should probably vote for the person who you think would make the best president, and that's how I would advise people to use their vote this November.
I guess I'd advise them further, Kathy. I would advise them not to throw away their vote. You know, if I wanted someone who absolutely represented everything I believe in, I'd vote for myself in this election, not to be presumptuous, but I think I know what I think better than anybody else. And everyone could vote for themselves, and that would certainly take votes away from Kerry, but you'd get the perfect solution. I think sometimes you've got to vote for someone who's a very good man, Senator John Kerry, and recognize that only two people have a chance to win November 2nd. And, you know, if you want to vote in your local election for the Green Party or something like that, that's your right. But it seems to me that Ralph Nader had a chance. He had a chance. He could have entered the Democratic debate. He could have been in all those debates along with all of the candidates. He could have taken his ideas through the Democratic Party. We certainly had people like Dennis Kucinich and others whose views, I think, were even to the left of Nader's. Nader chose not to go the route that is the only route that works in America. And while I support changes to our system, we have a constitution, and it's not going to change easily, and it's not going to change anytime soon. So I would say to Xavier and all the Nader's voters out there, you know, last time people who voted for Nader ended up electing George Bush. Please don't do it again.
Hey, and just to go back to the point that there are some real election reform issues in this country that are pressing in the very short term.
Kathy,
and that is that people were disenfranchised, votes were
absolutely
not counted, and people are turned away from the polls, and voters are intimidated and suppressed in some precincts in this country.
Absolutely.
To this day.
And in fact,
an immediate problem that needs an immediate solution.
And what is Kerry's solution to that?
Well, he strongly supports the Voting Rights Act that will hopefully go back and fix some of the problems of the 2000 election, and making sure that we have proper machines and that people with disabilities have opportunities to vote without having their voting being made public or anything like that, which is something that's had to happen to people so far. And so unfortunately, we still have a long way in going to just making sure that everyone can vote as fairly and freely and personally and privately as possible.
Kathy, you've been terrific. I want to thank you very much for appearing on my show. We got to go on to my next guest, who's the national spokesman for the Democratic National Committee. But thank you very much, Kathy Roeder, for taking your time out from the Kerry campaign.
It was a pleasure. Thanks.
And appearing on my show. Listen, hey, I know I've got a bunch of callers holding. Stay on. Stay on, because we've got another guest, a terrific guest. He is the national spokesman for the Democratic National Committee. His name is Hanno Cabrera. And go ahead, ask him the tough questions. It's your right as an American to know the answers. And again, it's not often you're going to speak with the national spokesman. So we have to go to a break. But when we come back, We'll have National Spokesman Hanno Cabrera. If you're on, hanging on the line, I know the lights are lit, stay on. If you want to join in the discussion, please do. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can also email me by sending an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. Back with Hanno Cabrera, the DNC National Spokesman, right after these messages.
Says he cares about the middle class, but the giant corporations get all the cash. We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. In an effort to cut costs by more than $900 million, chemical giant DuPont announced yesterday that it intends to cut 6% of its global workforce by the end of the year. Of the 59,000 DuPont employees around the globe, about 3,000 will be laid off, with two-thirds of the job cuts coming in the U.S. and Canada. The chemical giant also expects to lose 450 contractors and cut another 500 positions through attrition. DuPont employees were informed of the cuts Monday morning in an email. Once word of the firings got out, DuPont shares rose 66 cents on the New York Stock Exchange.
The ball may be rolling toward a strike of 100,000 service and support workers at SBC Communications. Last week, their union, the Communications Workers of America, gave the company 30 days' notice of a walkout, which is contingent on a strike ballot being voted on this month. The results of that are expected on April 29th, which just happens to be the day before SBC shareholders meet in Columbus, Ohio. After an extended weekend off, the company and union resumed bargaining today. Affordable health insurance and limits on outsourcing and offshoring of SBC jobs remain the two major points of contention.
Indian Tea Garden workers are in a nightmarish situation. More than 800 workers have died of starvation, malnutrition, and disease in the abandoned tea gardens of North Bengal, according to the Indian People's Tribunal on Human Rights and the Environment. The tea plantations closed suddenly and without notice as managers cut off electricity and water to the homes of laborers, who are reportedly surviving on wild roots and rats. At least 25 tea gardens have closed in the past 3 years, leaving 1 million workers unemployed. There are 160 gardens in North Bengal, and many more may soon close due to a crash in global market prices.
A new report from the Palestinian Authority says unemployment in the Gaza Strip and West Bank has topped the 50% mark, and 8 out of 10 Palestinians in the occupied territories live below the poverty line. On average, Palestinians who are working manage just $2 a day in compensation. Construction of an Israeli wall around the Palestinian territories is blamed for many being thrown out of work, no longer able to freely travel to previous jobs in Israel.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. It's official, a job in the U.S. Armed Services is the most hazardous American profession. More than 675 service members have died in Iraq since the beginning of President Bush's invasion last year, 74 since April 1st alone. Meanwhile, the toll of the wounded keeps on piling up. According to United Press International, the military made more than 18,000 medical evacuations in the first year of fighting.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine, on Election Tuesday, where we do what we can do to kick out the Republicans, as the song says. And this is your chance to ask questions from the very top of the Democratic leadership. We have on the line Hanno Cabrera. He's the Democratic National Committee National Spokesman, and I know I've got a number of people holding on the line. There is one line open if you want to call in. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number. You can also send me an email. Send an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. Hanno, I want to thank you very much for coming on the program. Hanno, are you there? Hello, Hanno Cabrera. We may have lost him. I don't know. We'll wait for Hanno to come back, but meanwhile, let me take one of the callers.
Mark?
Yes. Hanna, are you there?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
I was afraid I lost you for a moment there. Hanna, we got a caller on the line. Caller, you're on the air. What's your first name and where are you from? Caller? Did I lose my caller? I don't know. Okay, let's go to the next caller. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Hanna Cabrera. What's your first name and where are you from?
I'm Gordon, and I'm from Smith Creek, Michigan.
Hello, Gordon from Michigan. What's your question for my guest?
Well, I'm wondering if he's aware of the drive for the cabinet-level position of Secretary of Peace.
Okay.
And I wonder what his stand is on the idea of the establishment of a cabinet-level Department of Peace.
Well, let me ask you, Gordon, what would you see a cabinet of peace doing that is different from the Department of State or Department of Defense?
Well, he would be an advisor to the president who would advise the president for nonviolent alternatives to perhaps military functions and military reprisal. Does that ring a bell in Iraq? In fact, it would, if it was enacted now, the Secretary of Peace would have advisors who would be able to go into Iraq and perhaps lead the U.S. as a proponent for peace for the Iraqi people rather than having us right now be a common foe for the American people because of, maybe we had a peaceful way to react to Fallujah rather than military reprisal.
As I recall, this actually was one of Dennis Kucinich's ideas in the campaign.
Yep, of course.
Let me ask our guest, Hanna Cabrera, what is Kerry's position on the Department of Peace, and more broadly, what would he do to stop some of the violence against our soldiers and Americans in Iraq?
Well, I think that you hit on it. This was a proposal that was put forward by Dennis Kucinich and his campaign. Senator Kerry hasn't proposed such a proposal during the course of his campaign, but the goal here that I think that the caller has identified, that of bringing stability to Iraq, trying a more reasonable foreign policy than this president has put forward, one where we work with allies in a coalition rather than a go-it-alone policy, I think can be achieved. Not necessarily by setting up this department, but by changing presidents.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably the case.
The Department of Peace goes beyond international aspects, of course. It also would branch off into the domestic scene. And
what would it do domestically?
The expanses of H.R. Bill 1673, which proposes this Department of Peace, we would be able to deal with the education of many nonviolent schemes on the domestic level also.
Okay, thanks very much for your call, Gordon. I appreciate your call on the Inside Scoop. Well, how about it? What about domestically educating people into nonviolence? Would that help?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, again, really what this comes down to is that, you know, this president has put forward a tone and tenor that the caller obviously doesn't like. And I think a lot of Democrats and a lot of progressives understand that. But I think that the solution, more than anything, more than creating a new department, more than duplicating efforts that are already there, is to just change the tone in Washington and change the leadership in Washington. And the only way you're going to do that is by changing the president.
You know, one of the things I've noticed, Hanna, that the Bush campaign does in its commercials and so forth is something that I think the psychiatrists call projection. Whenever Bush can't do something very well, he complains that Kerry can't do it. For example, I love the argument the Bush campaign makes that Kerry has no plan for Iraq, when it's obvious that the president has no plan for Iraq, or when he says that Kerry's a flip-flopper, this the president that opposed the 9/11 Commission, supported the 9/11 Commission, opposed the Department of Homeland Security, supported the Department of Homeland Security, you know, flip-flops all the time. One of the problems, and I researched this way back in college when I did a paper on Joe McCarthy, it's amazing to me how a demagogue can take something and really twist it until suddenly Kerry has to defend himself on flip-flopping from one of the greatest flip-floppers, and Kerry has to present a plan for Iraq from someone that has no plan for Iraq. How is it, both in Iraq and flip-flopping, and how is it that Kerry can respond without looking defensive, but at the same time making clear that, hey, you know, Bush he does the same things that he complains Kerry does?
Sure.
I mean, how does he respond to that?
At the end of the day, the goal here for both sides is to remember that these attacks aren't going to settle this debate. When voters go into the voting booth in November, they're going to make their decision based on one criteria alone. And that is, who do I think has the best plan for this country. Bush has had nearly 4 years to show that he can do that he can do the job of the presidency. And unlike Kerry, who actually has a record he can run on, I mean, just think about what Bush offers the country. Anytime he talks about his record on the economy, we're going to point out that there are 3 million jobs lost under him.
The worst since Herbert Hoover.
The worst since Hoover. Anytime he talks about fiscal responsibility, we'll point to deficits and debt. Anytime he tries to talk about education, we'll talk about the fact that he underfunded Leave No Child Behind.
You know, I hope you show that big chart of our national debt, because to me, when you look at the chart, you know, Ross Perot, and I'm not a big fan of Ross Perot, but one thing he did really well was he had those big charts. And,
sure.
And to me, the biggest chart showing our huge deficit, having Clinton bring us, having us into big surplus, and then goes back down to the worst with George Bush. I could just see, I mean, not that I can control the commercials, but maybe I'll give you my idea. You can have a commercial with a little guy with big ears, you know, talking in a Perot-like voice, pointing with a pointer, and just showing people, you know, because, hey, Perot got, what, 14% of the vote in one election, 8% in another? Just point to the debt and say, you know, America, you know, look at this, and then he can talk about that giant sucking sound. Because it seems to me that the Perot voters, the radical middle, have got to hate this president, and it's just got to be pointed out to them. Wait, will you consider that commercial for me?
Yeah, I promise you I will, and I got to tell you that, you know, it's something that resonates, because if there's one thing, there are a number of things that the president has to do that most people can't identify with. We don't get presidential daily briefings. We don't have to make decisions of national security. But we all have to, without a doubt, balance our checkbooks, manage our money, make, you know, the dollar stretch as much as we can. And, you know, we know when we're in deficit and debt. We know when we've gone too much into credit card debt. And we know that isn't something that we like to be in. And that certainly isn't something that we want from our leaders.
Hanna, let me ask you a tough question. It's one that Kerry is going to have to answer, that he's going to have to answer many times. And I think it's frankly his biggest weakness on policy matters. And that is the perception that if Kerry comes into office, he's going to raise your taxes. I saw a recent poll that something like 60% of Americans thought Kerry was going to raise their taxes. And yet my understanding of the Kerry plan is it would actually lower taxes for more than 90% of Americans.
I'm more than happy to answer that question. It's rare that I'll ever say this, but 60% of those polled were wrong, obviously.
Yeah, it seems
Kerry
like it. Give me the specifics.
Plan.
Yeah.
Kerry tax plan, I just want to say this as clearly as I can, would cut taxes for 98% of all taxpayers.
98%.
So what that means
that's
is
below what income level? Because, you know, I think sometimes everyone thinks they're in the top income level, but they don't. They're really not. Everyone seems to think they're doing, you know, they're in the top 2% in America. What is the income level?
We're talking about 200,000.
200,000. So if you make less than 200,000 a year, you will get a tax cut under John Kerry?
That's absolutely correct.
Well, let me just say again, I'm not your ad guy, but I would just plaster that. And I would not just say 98%, because some people don't know where they stand. Let people know if they make under 200 grand, they're going to get a tax cut under John Kerry. And I think his polls will go way up.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let me ask you this, though. John Kerry says he can create 10 million jobs. Well, let me play the skeptic here. 10 million jobs? I mean, Bush lost 3 million. How is John Kerry going to create 10 million jobs?
You have to keep in mind that something that President Clinton understood very well, and that is that one of the things that creates jobs in this country is sending a signal to the business community that you, as a president, can take the reins of fiscal responsibility and be a fiscally responsible president. This president hasn't done that, which is why interest rates are where they are, which is why we're in deficits and debt, whereas Kerry has said that he wants to cut the deficit in, you know, during his first term, in half, and if need be, he will focus on that goal more than any other. It may come at the sacrifice of some of the programs that he's put forward, but what that does is that it sends a signal to the business community that this person is intent on bringing America's fiscal house back in order.
So that's
one thing. I mean, it sends a signal to the business community that, yes, America, you actually can invest back in this country again. And the second thing is he's pointed to the fact that there are a lot of corporations who currently, under the existing U.S. tax code, have every incentive to actually set up their businesses and their organizations abroad.
Like Halliburton did.
Exactly. They have an incentive. There's actually an incentive under the U.S. tax code, under this president, to start a business and then incorporate somewhere else and then never pay taxes. What we need to do is fix the tax code so that those businesses that are based abroad come back home and those jobs go to American workers.
Let me ask you another tough question. One of the Bush ads out there says that John Kerry raised taxes 350 times. And I've tried to explain to my listeners that it's very different if you're president of the United States and you're in the legislature, because the president can decide everything he wants. This president can decide, he did, by the way, folks. He doesn't want body armor for the troops. He doesn't want to buy up loose nukes in the Soviet Union. He doesn't want to protect our homeland security. He does want to spend money on Halliburton. That the president can decide. But when you're in the legislature, I've seen these bills. I worked in Congress. You know, the bills are 150 pages long. They're an omnibus spending bill that's got 10,326 items. And if you vote for it because you like, you know, some items better than other items, suddenly there's 27 tax cuts, and that's included in the Bush figures. This is complex enough.
Yeah.
I'm concerned, as someone who's worked in Congress, I know the facts, I understand how it works, but it's very hard to explain that in a soundbite. How are you going to be able to do that?
The first thing is, the Bush campaign cannot support the facts that they've asserted in this ad.
Okay.
They cannot explain to the press how they arrived at that figure.
Okay.
It's important for your listeners to know that. It's not true.
Okay.
They can't prove that.
One wag, I think, mentioned that they mentioned the same tax 9 times or something.
Exactly. I mean, this isn't even about double counting or triple counting,
right,
or quadruple counting. They're
right,
counting the same vote
non-nupple,
nine different times.
Right.
Which only goes to prove that if you're Republican, you have a problem adding up numbers.
Or counting votes too much.
Exactly. Or counting votes. Exactly.
It's a tough systemic question. How do you get across the difference between a legislator who's got to vote up or down and doesn't craft bills? How can you get that across to the American people?
Well, I think that we're in a new age in Democratic politics. We're in a new age in politics here in America specifically. There was a time when an ad would appear on television and voters wouldn't question it. They would accept it as fact because it was a new medium, it was something that they weren't used to. Now, voters are much more savvy when it comes to television. They're especially much savvier when it comes to television ads. One thing I would urge all of your listeners to do is if you hear an advertisement from the Republicans that sounds too good to be true, it's because it isn't. These wild assertions, these wild accusations are rarely, if ever, supported. But they know they can go out, put these ads on, you know, spend the hundreds of millions that they raised in special interest money and see if they can get away with it.
Well,
unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be working because, according to the latest polls, John Kerry is leading George W. Bush by 7 points.
Yeah, I've seen them neck and neck. Are you sure? What
Rand
poll?
Rand Sankey's new poll came out yesterday. It was...
I guess the 9/11
and MSNBC, they joined forces to
7 points.
And John Kerry is beating George W. Bush decisively.
Is he over 50% yet, though?
He is over 50%.
Really?
And if you include Ralph Nader, you would think, oh, well, maybe John Kerry doesn't.
Yeah, I'm scared about Nader.
No, in fact, if you include Ralph Nader, John Kerry is still beating George W. Bush by 4 points.
Okay, but that's no reason to be complacent, folks. This is a
no,
long way till November. Let me ask you a question that one of my listeners asked when we had the Kerry spokesperson on, and it's kind of a tough question. I think my listener was trying to sort of divide up our friends here, but he asked, and I think it's a fair question, if he gives money to the Kerry campaign, okay, it goes to Kerry. Where does money go if he gives it to the DNC, the Democratic National Committee? Where does that money go?
Okay, well, a couple different places. There are two funds that you can give to the DNC. One is the joint victory fund with the Kerry campaign. All that means is that a portion of whatever you give would go both to the DNC and to John Kerry. The second fund, which is just to the DNC, means that whatever you give to the Democratic Party is going to be used to help elect Democrats. Well, you know, across the board, up and down the ticket, to the extent that what the Democratic Party is going to do with that money is use it for get-out-the-vote efforts, use it to put up ads, everything that you would want your community to do if you were a precinct captain will be done by the DNC. That's what we're here for. If you exist in a community and you wish that you had the power and the time and the ability to produce flyers or ads and, like, just share the knowledge you have as to why this president shouldn't be elected and why Democrats are in a better position to lead this country, you know, just save yourself some time and give that money to the Democratic Party, because this is what we have been doing since time immemorial. This is the longest existing party in our nation's history. we've gotten somewhat good at, you know, getting out the vote at this point. We would like to say that, you know, we won the race in 1992, 1996.
2000.
And 2000.
Right.
Despite the asterisk.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I really don't think they can say re-elect George Bush. They can say re-select George Bush, only if Scalia gets in control. Hey, if you don't mind, Hanno, I got a couple more questions for you. If we'll just stay just a few minutes longer. One is from Ben. He's one of my conservative lurkers. I welcome, by the way, those of you that are conservatives and listening to my show. I think it's vital to have the debate there, and I welcome you, and I'm glad Ben is a frequent conservative listener. He sends me an email, and it's a bit skeptical, but he asks, what specifically would someone making $50,000 a year get back in a Kerry tax cut? I don't know. Can you answer that question?
Yeah, I got to be honest. You know, I don't know the details of the Kerry tax plan.
Is it on johnkerry.com?
But I can say that, you know, under the current Bush tax plan, you only actually get a significant benefit if you're making hundreds of thousands of dollars. If you are earning in the tens of thousands, if you're a typical middle income person, you are not getting a significant benefit under the Bush tax
plan. Right, unless you've got these huge assets and maybe relatives died and left you $100 million, then you actually get a big benefit under Bush. But if you're trying to work and make a living, he's not going to cut your Social Security taxes, your Medicare taxes, the taxes that working people pay.
Exactly. To Ben, I would simply say this. If you want to know the differences between John Kerry and George W. Bush on taxes, I would urge you to go to the website. But just broadly speaking, the difference is this. George W. Bush tailors most of the benefit from his tax plan toward the wealthy, toward the elite, toward those who already have. John Kerry does the exact opposite. He tailors most of the benefit to the working class, to the middle class, to those who have family and children. And, you know, it comes down to what priorities you have.
Well, Ben,
in those two plans, which would you rather have?
And I'll tell you, we should be able to respond to people like Ben, and I would hope that the DNC or John Kerry would actually spell it out and in clear form, put it on a website, let people see exactly how much money they'll get back, and that would answer a lot of the conservative critics. I got one last question. It's a tough one. First, I asked you a question from the right. Now I'm going to hit you from the left. And this is one of, frankly, my concerns about Democrats in general, John Kerry specifically, and that is that they're not being tough enough. Here on my program, I've talked about Bush's insider trading and Harkin Energy. I've talked about what's gone on with when he was AWOL. I've talked about his Saudi ties. We did a whole show yesterday on the ties between the Saudis and the Bush administration, about Valerie Plame, the CIA agent that they basically, someone in the White House committed treason to try to stop her husband, Joe Wilson, from telling the truth about the Bush administration. There's so much going on and so much terrible stuff going on. And I'm concerned that, again, maybe Kerry can stay above the fray, but I would hope that Democrats, I know Terry McAuliffe talked about the AWOL, but I would hope just that Democrats don't play too nice, because sometimes I feel like the Republicans, they're tough. They do unfair charges. We have the truth on our side, but people are squeamish about bringing up some of these things. I hope the DNC will hit and hit hard on some of these issues. What do you think?
I gotta tell you, I hope that in the days to come, we will make you proud.
Okay. Well, good, because I got to tell you something. One of my favorite things I heard Ann Coulter say, no one dislikes Ann Coulter more than I do, but when she was talking about Bush's AWOL service, she said, you know what? We shouldn't talk about either man's service. We shouldn't talk about Kerry in Vietnam or Bush being AWOL. She didn't say AWOL. Bush service in the National Guard. We should just leave them both off the table. And I started laughing. Of course you don't want to talk about Kerry's distinguished service versus Bush's undistinguished service. And I'm just saying that's exactly what they want, and I hope that we Democrats, fight hard and give them hell, as Harry Truman used to say.
I guarantee you that we will, and the difference between us and the Republican Party is that, you know, they are going to have to make stuff up about John Kerry, whereas we have the facts on our side.
We have the facts on our side, and we can hit hard. Thank you so much, Hanno, for appearing on my program.
No problem. Good luck with the rest of the show.
Thanks. Well, we just got a few minutes left. I promised you an inside scoop, and I want to give it to you. The inside scoop has to do with Tom Scully. Now, frequent listeners to the inside scoop know who Tom Scully is. Tom Scully is the Bush bureaucrat who worked for the Medicare, the Department of Health and Human Services, specifically the Medicare part of that. He was brought a estimate of how much Bush's Medicare bill would cost by a guy lower down, Richard Foster. And Richard Foster said that he showed the figures. He's an actuary. He's an accountant, right? He's not got no political axe. And he showed that Bush's bill was going to cost $140 billion more than he told Congress it would. And he was asked by members of Congress how much would it cost. So he goes to his boss, Tom Scully, and he says, you know, I was asked by his member of Congress. Can I tell them the truth? Tom Scully says, no, you can't tell members of Congress the truth. And if you do, as Donald Trump would put it, you're fired, right? If you tell members of Congress the truth, you're fired. That's the Bush administration line. So Richard Foster meekly went back, didn't tell him the truth. The vote actually on the Medicare bill, those of you, again, who are frequent listeners know, the Democrats had actually won the vote. Bush's bill was going down in flames. Then they did some bribery on the House floor for Republican Congressman Nick Smith. He didn't change his vote, but they twisted enough arms. Three members did, not knowing about the lie in cost, and Bush got his Medicare bill through. Well, Tom Scully was punished in the press, you would think, for saying that he had to lie to Congress or his employee would be fired. But no, he isn't punished at all, because the inside scoop is he's left government. And now guess who Tom Scully is working for? He's working for a group that lobbies Congress to get more money from Medicare. He's working for a wheelchair company that's trying to get more subsidies for the specific kinds of wheelchairs it buys, even for people who can walk. He's trying to help them. So he's making millions of dollars trading on his access, this guy who was kicked out for wanting to lie to Congress. Isn't that just the way the Bush administration works? Well, time's up, folks. The hour goes by fast. I hope you've enjoyed this Election Tuesday. Tomorrow, we've got a terrific guest, Sheldon Brampton. He's the author of Weapons of Mass Deception. He's going to focus on how it is that the propaganda campaign in Iraq actually worked, how it is that the Bush administration managed to persuade enough Americans that there actually were weapons of mass deception. Then on Thursday, we've got noted abortion doctor Frank Boehm talking about a middle ground. Can there be a middle ground on abortion between pro-choice and pro-life? He's a terrific guest, head of medical ethics at Vanderbilt University. You may think you know everything you need to know about abortion, but I'm going to raise, I hope, some aspects of it that you haven't heard before. You can learn really all the ins and outs of this very important debate for America. Well, that's it for the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine saying I hope that you'll support Radio Power. You can give your donations. Radio Power streams this. They're an independent streamer, and they survive off your donations. And I also hope that you'll support the Inside Scoop. Go to my website, radioinsidescoop.com. You can advertise. You got a product to sell. You want to sponsor a liberal cause. Help out. Spread the word. Spread and help progressive voices on the radio. You know, there's all kinds of things you can do. You can call your local radio station, ask them to put me on the air, or you can advertise a product on the Inside Scoop, or you can just go out and work for the Democratic Party and help elect John Kerry President of the United States. This is Mark Levine signing off. Tune in tomorrow for another edition of The Inside Scoop.
floor. When the GOP is leaving, I hope that they don't hit their heads on the door. Bush says he cares about the middle class, but the giant corporations get all the cash. We got a $500 billion deficit. It's time to make the Republicans quit.